In fact, today is the day the Lord has made, and I am grateful and glad within it. And I'm also pleased to welcome you into the times God has decided we will live, as bizarre as they are. Better to be realists, pragmatic realists, than to lie to ourselves. These are the times in which God has decided we will live. And they are weird times, or as John Lennon said, strange days indeed. Then he added, parenthetically, most peculiar, mama, but it doesn't sound great when you, I mean, without the music, no one walks around saying most peculiar mama. No one does that. Well, John Lennon did it. Why am I mentioning John Lennon? Can I tell you? At some point or another, and there's this, this is not, I promise you, this is not a Herman mentioned a Beatle. Therefore, the next 20 minutes are about how the Beatles fundamentally changed not just rock music, but all music, and invented things like the middle eight, and in fact was the first band to use, what was it, a major eighth, and I think they're the first to use minor sevenths in pop music. Certainly the first to, sorry. Now I'm starting to get off on that, you know, the whole thing, but and I won't do it. I'm not going to mention a word about John Lennon being the first person to use feedback in a song. That was an accident. Lennon took credit for that. I'm not going to go on a Beatles rant much. Well, no, there's a reason for this. There was a point in the 60s where John Lennon decided, because he was taking a lot of heroin. They talked a lot about pot. But John was, he loved heroin, and he was like in his house, I think he called it Special K. I know there's a drug called Special K. I know that, but he had his morning routine, which started at noon, and he'd wake up and write songs and not leave the house. And, in fact, that song, good morning, nothing to do, but it's okay. That was during his heroin fetish. To the benefit of Mr. Kite, that was during his heroin fetish. He couldn't think of a song to write. So he looked on his wall and he had an old circus poster. And so he's just completely out of it on heroin. It's a great song. So he was wasted, and he was so wasted that he got this idea. You know what I'll do? I'll have this dude I've heard about come over to my house. Well, in fact, I think it was the flat in London. And I'm going to get good and stoned, and then this guy's going to drill a hole in my skull, but not all the way into my brain. Just to the edge of my brain where there is the layer of, I guess it's, I don't know what it's called, but it's like a, I mean, it keeps your brain in your head. If you break your skull open, there's this white stuff that keeps your brain from coming out, and it has traps the fluids in there. So think of this. Here I am, the world's most famous musician, along with my frenemy, Paul McCartney. I'm stoned, and I want better ideas for my music because Sir George Martin can't make my voice sound good enough. I'm not creative enough. I need to have more creativity flow into my head. So what I'm going to do is have a dude I don't know who's not a doctor bring a drill over and drill into my head, but really carefully, and just through the skull, not into the brain or the sac that encloses the brain. He was going to do this. Someone somewhere said, hey, John, about the guy you're going to have come drill a hole in your head. It may not be the best idea that you have a guy you don't know come to your house, your flat in London, and drill a hole in your head. It may not work, son. A lad, John, love. Someone talked him out of it. So he didn't do it. He was going to do this. The point of the story? Doctors in Ontario, Canada, have been forbidden by the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario from contradicting the COVID narrative. Doctors are not allowed to say, oi, about putting their woke masks on the children, you know. I mean, there's hypoxia, you know, they could die. And it's, you know, they could rot their brains and not have oxygen and have long-term effects psychologically too, like not developing mirror synapses. So they can't understand people's moods. It'd be like raising a generation of kids who can't understand the mood of their... They're not allowed to say it. They're not allowed to warn people that, hey, you know what? If you don't have any comorbid factors and you're 6 months old, you are insane to shoot a six-month-old up with these COVID drugs. Mathematically, you're insane. Or, for that matter, a five-year-old or an eight-year-old or 11-year-old or a 17-year-old. They're not allowed to say, hey, you know, locking people in their houses, which is the most common place that COVID is transmitted, is not a good idea. Instead, they should be outside with vitamin D. And speaking of vitamin D, they're not to talk about things that aren't big pharma moneymakers. They're not to talk about, well, yeah, sure, you could use the Johnson & Johnson injection or the, well, I guess the AstraZeneca thing, is that even allowed anymore? You could use the Pfizer injection, the Moderna injection, or if you get sick, you could use a $5 ivermectin. You could use a $5 hydroxychloroquine protocol. You could use the antigens, which are not going to disappear your blood platelets. They're not allowed to say these things. So you could have a situation where you're a doctor in Ontario. You could have a woman who's pregnant in your waiting room or in your doctor's office. And she could have had two miscarriages. And she could have had really unstable pregnancy. And she could be having an unstable pregnancy. And she could have listened to Michael Yeardon, the former vice president of research for Pfizer, when he said, you're going to see a lot of miscarriages with these with these injections. She could have read that data. She could have seen the data that we're seeing, all sorts of database indications of vaginal bleeding and problems with pregnancies, etc., far outsized to what we ever saw with the flu vaccines. She could have read all of these things. She could have read the warnings from Michael Yeardon and other doctors saying, don't take this stuff if you're young and pregnant, unless you're wildly comorbid, wildly obese, or you have, you know, severe vitamin D withdrawal and you can't get it back. Don't consider this. Don't do it. And that woman could look you in the eye and she could touch your hand and she could say, doctor, should I do this? Should I inject myself, allow you to inject me with these things? And the doctor is to say, oh, absolutely. The authority is to say, I'm not allowed to tell you my opinion. Question, why is there medical school? Why are there doctors? If it's as simple as banning an opinion, why are there doctors? Why do they have medical consults? You know they do this, right? They have a patient with a particularly problematic, you know, presenting problematic symptoms that maybe don't make sense. They have physician discussions. They get together in a room and they throw out ideas. Has anyone ever seen anything like this? But we're not going to do this with the one virus that we're being told is the thing that will end the world. If we don't just do what we're told. Do you know how many things wouldn't exist in medicine if people did what they were told? The defibrillator. Think of this. Think of the defibrillator.
You know, Chris, I got an idea. When someone's having a heart attack, let's shock the living garbage out of them with electricity.
What?
Yeah, shock them with electricity. It'll help them.
Are we really going to pretend that this has anything to do with excellent healthcare? You can't even discuss things as doctors. It's not just healthcare. Gosh, I hate saying this. It's not just healthcare. It's churches. Are you sure you're going to a Christian church? It's not just churches. It's the figurehead in the White House. We'll explore this right after we check traffic with Right Way Traffic. There's a Christian church. I saw this online. I've seen a bunch of these. In fact, I got an email from a friend of mine who has emigrated from the separate country of Seattle into, he's now living in America, Idaho. And no, sorry. In fact, I have an email coming up. Someone asked me to describe what it's like in America. They wrote to me from Tacoma. That's coming up here. His former church in Seattle is insisting that you take one of the big pharma injections in order to go to church. Not the antigens, mind you. You can't just use the antibodies to make sure that you have actual immunity. You can't do that. You can't say, I promise if I feel sick at all, I'll get ivermectin. You can't use hydroxychloroquine. You can't do vitamin D and sun and exercise and keep your weight low. Nope, nope, nope. Only the big three pharma things that get shoved into your arm will work to go to this church. Here is a sign, and I verified that churches are doing this. Here's a sign from a church. Jesus wore a crown of thorns. You can wear a mask. Well, they are the same thing. You know, carrying through with the plan you thought of as the triune God to, in fact, pay the debts of the world that the world couldn't pay, to die on a cross when you didn't need to die on a cross. Well, you needed to because it was your plan, but you could have spoken the word and said, stop, to give people another shot at everlasting life that was lost in the original sin of the Garden of Eden. You could have done that. Actual Christians believe that Christ went to the cross to perform the greatest miracle, the greatest service. In fact, the greatest act of humility ever conceived of in the world. And it works according to Christian theory. Wearing woke masks, don't. Furthermore, the inference here is that Jesus just did what the authorities told him. Just, okay. He went and got crucified and tortured. Well, being crucified is being tortured, but he was tortured and then crucified. He did that because he's like, well, you can't fight City Hall. Oh, it's just me, God. I can't. You know, what am I going to do? You can't fight City Hall. You got to pay your parking ticket, so I'll let them nail me to a cross. It's not what he did. When biblically he was told, hey, we need you to stop healing people on the Sundays, or on the Sabbath. It wasn't Sunday, but we need you to stop healing people on the Sabbath. You're not to do that. Jesus said, go look this up, okay? Get your books out or the Google and look up the difference between mercy and sacrifice, and then you'll understand what my Father wants. He wants the mercy part. Just go look that up. When he was basically ordered by the Roman authorities to answer a question, are you the king of the Jews? He says, you say I am. He didn't care what they said. Should we pay taxes? I don't know. Whose picture's in that coin? Oh, who is that? That's Caesar. That belongs to him. Give it to him. But when it came to issues, salvation oriented, he didn't just say, oh, sorry, I'm offending you by speaking the word of God. I have to be effective. I have to feed my sheep. I have to do this. This is my plan. Participating in scaring people with woke masks? Looking at the data of the woke mask and saying, these aren't only not helpful, these are harmful.
to life, to our health. Why would we wear these? They're not comparable. That's, and by the way, that's not a Christian church. Likewise, this church in Seattle demanding the magic injections. That's not a church. How do I know? Because Jesus went to the lepers. I mean, if you took this in a modern sense, you'd have Jesus walking around and he's with his, you know, disciples, and they're walking down the road, and Jesus says, and there's a leper coming to him, and Jesus says, "Oh, wow, don't let that dude near me. I'm going to get some on me." And I know I'm being irreverent. Forgive me, Lord. He embraced the leper. He walked up to this sick person. He didn't say, "Hey, Peter, can I borrow your coat? Because I don't want mine to get leper on it." So what he did. You're not attending a Christian church if you're doing these things. And this goes to the very point of everything the left does. Everything they do is to take what is and to make it what is not. Let's take this. Joe Biden is not the president. Even if, and look, what I've said about the election is I don't trust the results. Why would I? They brag in Time magazine that they broke all the rules, that they hid information from the American people, that they bought in these, you know, illegal drop boxes. I've watched the Supreme Court say, yeah, that part where the Constitution says only the state legislatures can change voting laws. Yeah, we figured out that that's stupid. So no, not anymore. Not so much. I watched them do that. But even if there was zero fraud, and there was fraud, but even if there was zero fraud, Joe Biden's not president. Joe Biden went, he went to tour a plant in New Orleans. He's at the plant talking to people from note cards. You got to see this video. Text Todd to 800-465-8770. It'll be in the show notes. He's using note cards to talk to people at a factory.
So what do you do here, man? You make factories?
No, this is a factory.
Well, do you make them?
Make what?
The women's clothing on the second... that's the wrong card. Come on. Welcome, everybody. I just about got it.
These are not the activities of someone who's cognitively there. Christian churches don't require injections. They welcome the sick. A mask is not the cross. Doctors who can't discuss cases with people and can't discuss their particular opinion about whether their patient should have a treatment or not are not doctors. Old men who have to read from note cards because they're touring a factory, those aren't presidents. The left takes everything that is and replaces it with everything that is not. There's no such thing as a birthing person. There's mothers. There's women who get pregnant. There's no such thing as a birthing person. Fact. If your movement exists to take what is and replace it with what is not, you are constructing a massive series of lies. Guess what happens to those? They fall apart. And people get hurt. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show with your text messages after we check traffic with Right Way Traffic. That's just about right. The big voice. You could also email me at therman@ktth.com. Please do give yourself a nickname the first time you use the text line on email at therman@ktth.com from Tina. Dear Todd, God bless you for your program. You and Alex do such a great job of presenting the narratives that we simply can't get anywhere else. We're in prayer that you continue to do that and continue to be allowed the freedom to do that. I'm a teacher. I'd rather not say in which city, and have just read that the governor of our state has instituted critical race theory in all schools. A lot of us saw this coming. Certainly our school union did, and they're fully in favor of it. I ponder this, and internally, I'm aware of the fact that there are people who really do believe in systemic racism, and I'm willing to have those conversations with them. The fact is, that's what I do. I teach debate and philosophy. Naturally, as a consequence, I enjoy debating philosophies with people. But the more pragmatic portion of me, and perhaps this is a side effect of listening to your program, can't help but to spot this as part of a pattern. You're the first radio host I've heard use the phrase pattern recognition in the way that you do, and someday I'd like it if you would tell the listeners how you came about thinking in terms of pattern recognition for uncovering societal issues and misdeeds of government. It's sort of an interesting application of that particular act. Here's what I see, Todd, as a teacher. Critical race theory is simply a method of division. It doesn't provide any fundamental ways to change or make better race relations. Quite the opposite. By taking one race, that is the Caucasian race, for white is not in fact a race, and blaming it for any and all problems, it is instituting an official brand of racism. One could consider this a religion. There is no proof that there is anything inherently wrong with white people, not at a DNA level or at the level of a chromosome or societally, that causes them to be racist. There is nothing of the sort. There is only a theory, critical race theory. But by making one race responsible for any and all problems, that race has only two possible responses. I'm sorry, we'll stop, or no, we're not. Somewhere in the middle is something you referred to as keeping your talking hole shut, and that will work only for a short time. Eventually, the people who seize power for these methodologies will not put up with shut mouths. One not need look further than Cuba, Nicaragua, Russia, Korea, Vietnam, and other nations who've gone through revolutions like this. Closing your mouth and pretending to go along with the party ceases to be adequate. One must, in fact, extol the party. Again, look no further than China and the social credit score. What baffles me is how teachers of history and teachers of science and teachers of literature and, in fact, teachers of math can go along with this. Let's take it in reverse order, Todd. Mathematically, there simply aren't that many racists. If there were, we would see them committing acts of overt racism. It's not like racists became smart overnight and started being sneakily racist. Scientifically, again, to the point, there's nothing in the DNA, the blood type, the pH balance of white people that makes them inherently racist. In fact, if one is to consult history, yes, we've taken a step towards history, one will see that racism is in fact tribalism, race being a relatively new dynamic invented and exploited sometime in the last 300 years, and certainly in the last 50 used as a method of division. Tribalism has always existed, but prior to turning this into a race issue, people were critiqued for the size of their heads or the shape of their noses or the languages they spoke or the foods they ate, but not the color of their skin. This brings me to my last point. What we're really experiencing, Todd, is life after God. God created all the, quote, races of people. God created the command that we love none other more than him, and, of course, that we love our neighbor as we love ourself. If we love ourself as much as we love him and our neighbor, then racism as an application is dead. Being a philosophy teacher, I'm well acquainted with many smart, moral atheists, and they can be smart and moral. A nation operating without God will make one. Again, Todd, look no further than history. Every nation has invented a god. Being a Christian, of course, I believe ours is not invented, and people can argue with me on that. But when the god that you invent is the god of government and the god of division, that God will choose sides. The side it wants is the side of people who do consider it a big G God. The other side? Well, it must be destroyed. How teachers can go along with this and have any notion of history, philosophy, science, or mathematics is what absolutely chills me to the bone. I have one last year as a teacher, and then I get my retirement. I am going to keep my talking mouth shut until the day I retire. And then I will unleash on the teaching profession a series of evidence-based critiques that I've been amassing over the last 20 years. Hey, Todd, do you know any talk radio hosts who'd like to have access to something like that? God bless you and Alex for continuing to bring the truth and to lay out the narratives that other people simply will not provide us. Yours, Tina.
Whew. Anybody else need to stretch their gray matter? Dang. That's an opus, guys. That's an opus. And you better believe I want to get that. And I want to air that. Back to the emails from Dennis in Tacoma, Washington. Dear Todd, having made the move to what you call America, Idaho, can you provide those of us in the separate country of Washington State just a tiny taste of what this place you call America looks like? Is it true that there's really milk and honey flowing through the streets? Signed, Dennis in Occupied Tacoma. Well, it's not milk or honey. Well, I mean, there's some milk and honey in the streets, but that's just for, you have to live here for like 10 years before you get the free milk and honey. You don't just show up and then get to pull up at the curbside milk and honey and lean over like a cat and a dog and lap away at it. That's not the way it works, Dennis. Let me tell you the differences as I see it. No one cares if you wear a mask. No one cares if you don't. No one cares. No one cares about your vaccination status. No one. Now, down in Boise or Moscow, which are in fact occupied territories within Idaho, hint, hint, Idaho politicians, you better understand, those are Mao-like villages in the great social revolution, or I should say cultural revolution under which we're being pushed. The other differences are these. People are truly nice. I miss my friends in Seattle. I miss a good number of my colleagues in Seattle, a good number of them. I miss everybody at KTTH. I miss a good bunch of people at Cairo, too. The niceness here is familial. And maybe this is small town stuff, but I lived in a small town south of Seattle, and it took me 8 years to get friends in my neighborhood. I have friends at my restaurants, at my gyms. I do have two gyms, I know. At my churches. No, I have one church. That's true. I've only been to one church. At my church. I have friends at my coffee shack. When I say friends, I mean, I know what's going on in their lives. I know that one of our friends is graduating high school and headed off to college. I know that another of our friends is pregnant at the coffee shack. This weekend, I learned that one of our friends who works at our restaurant has been accepted into a respiratory therapy degree. I know that another has finally gotten engaged to her boyfriend of 3 years. And yes, thank you very much. They have been through a marriage class. That's a huge difference. I would also tell you this. People around here have deep talks with one another. Like, pretty quick off the bat, deep talks. They kind of trust their neighbors. People store food and they've got gardens. And they have access to water. And they'll share it with you too, if you need it. They'll help you fell a tree if you've never done that. They're armed. Most of them are armed. There's a lot of open carrying. I saw a lady open carrying a combat knife the other day. Young lady in her 20s. It was a long combat knife. I said, how good are you at that? She turned around and looked at me now. She said, about good enough. That's a little taste of America. Oh, there's Trump flags still up everywhere. President Trump is still president of Idaho, at least North Idaho. There's churches. There's a lot of churches.
A lot of people on Sunday, if you want to make time with them, they'll say, I have to go to church, or rather, they don't even say I have to. They say, I go to church on Sunday. It's kind of different over here, Dennis. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show and wrap up the day with a personal note next, right after we check traffic with Right Way Traffic. On a personal note today, like many of you, I had dinner with my mother. This Mother's Day weekend, I took her to my very favorite restaurant, which, funny, because they don't eat a lot of pizza. It is a pizza place in North Idaho. I've got to know the owners, and it's a very creative place. And in talking with my mom, we all become aware of our parents' age. My mother is very young for her age. That is her metabolic age, her physical age. And I cannot meet with my mom at these times without, of course, thinking of the inevitable, and that is that we all pass on. And there is a difficult conversation in the waiting about my mom and I and our different views on faith, and her view is I regard her as sort of a, I mean, she's a Catholic and she attends church, and her beliefs are her own, and perhaps it's not mine to critique them on the radio. She and I just have different beliefs. I love her, and so I will share my beliefs with her. And I always picture my mom in cursive handwriting, Catholic schoolgirl handwriting, and there's a reason for that. When I was a young man, when I was a boy, I changed. I went from being an overachiever of sorts, a kid who loved to do extra homework and sought the approval of teachers and wanted that really badly, to being a kid who was super angry. And in fact, got to a point where I made a decision. I remember making the decision. I'm going to break every rule that I can think of during recess. And I said this to these friends of mine. Let's have a contest so you can break the most rules. I went from being a rule follower to a rule breaker. And that happened shortly after my parents divorced. Divorce sometimes must happen. Cases of abuse or people who are, you know, being serial philanderers. That reminds me of Ted Kennedy. I'm a philanderer. I run around. Remember that, Brush Runner? I run around and around. That's one of the songs we're not supposed to play in EIB. I'll be back on EIB just coming up here in a bit. So sometimes, you know, divorce must happen. That wasn't the case with my parents. My father felt it had to happen because he had made a terrible mistake. And I became an angry kid. And I went from being this rule follower to a kid who was taken to the principal's office and talked to, and then became an expressed enemy of the school teachers. Not the teachers, per se, but say the real authoritarian teachers. And I don't know that they dealt with it real well, and I was too young to deal with it real well, and my mom was stuck in the middle. See, my mom was a school teacher. And I believe it hurt her career. I really do. You can't control your own kid. How are you going to control a classroom? Well, fact is, my mom was a brilliant teacher. And she had to leave Spokane to have a teaching career after I was who I was. I mean, I didn't go stab people or deal drugs or burn buildings down or hit teachers. I got sent home a lot. I got expelled a lot. I got into a fight or two and I argued with some teachers. And by the time I hit high school, I was lectured once by my football and wrestling coach. You will not have discipline problems. If you do, you'll not play sports. You will not get below a B. If you do, you'll not play sports. They both told me that flat out. This is it. This is it. This is all you get from us. This warning. But in junior high, I was horrible. I was sent home every day, it seemed, for in-school suspension, which I told him, you know, this is a joke, right? My mom doesn't work. I like Hogan's Heroes. I like the Flintstones. Send me home. I'm not going to blame the adults in my life for that, because maybe they didn't have the training to deal with such an angry kid. And there were those who tried. I think of my dear, now I think of him as a dear man, vice principal, junior high, invited me to go camping with his family. And I thought, freak. He probably wasn't a freak. He was probably just a very nice man. He was really worried for me. And there were freaks in school. Don't get me wrong. There was a teacher in elementary school who did the, hey, I have puppies. Come and see him at my house. I don't want to go to your house. I'll give you candy if you come to my house. I don't want candy. I'll pay you money to come to my house and paint a room for me. I don't want to paint a room at your house. I don't want candy. I don't want puppies. I'm not going to your house. And then when he dropped me off at home after he made me ride home with him, he says, hey, you don't need to tell your mom that I tried to get you to come to my house. I walked right in the door and said, so that guy's a pedophile. But that wasn't the case with my vice principal in junior high. Oh, the Catholic schoolgirl thing? The cursive? That? Yeah. I can remember getting expelled. I got expelled from sixth grade on the last day of school. The last day of school, I got expelled. And at the time, it was justified to me in my anger, my arrogance, my disregard for others, my lack of humility and my lack of belief in God. And I was a punk. I was also a really sensitive kid who just never really sufficiently told the world or had the tools to say or even understood that I don't want two homes. I don't want a stepmom. I miss my dad. So on that last day of school, a girl brought an egg. She brought eggs. She brought raw eggs the last day of school, and she was tossing them at people. And she was hitting people with these eggs, and these were like, some of them were friends of mine. Some of them were kids who didn't have any friends. And she was smacking them with raw eggs, and they're going to stink when they get home. She tossed one at me, and it missed. Well, I found out someone had some eggs. They intended to egg the school. That's smart. No one ever thinks of that the last day of school, kids are going to egg it. That's certainly not prepared for that. What? Egging a school? So I went to this kid and I said, hey, can I have an egg? Now, everyone else, like this girl who was throwing eggs at people, she was hiding in the virtual darkness from behind garbage cans. And I just walked right up to her in class. We had an open concept classroom, so there were no walls. There were no walls inside the school. You could just walk class to class. I remember her name. It was Anne Marie. I walked up and said, Anne Marie, were you throwing eggs at people this morning? I remember her looking at me with what I would regard as a haughty face and proud. And she always had really nice dresses and really nice things. And she said, yes, what are you going to do about it? And I said this. Just smashed an egg on her head. Right on top of her, as I recall, brownish red hair. A, Anne Marie, I'm sorry. That wasn't mine. That vengeance. B, you had it coming. You did. The principal hated my guts. He was expelling me on the last day of school. He told me, you're going to spend your life in prison. That's what he told me. Oh, the cursive. The Catholic schoolgirl cursive. I had to bring all my things to his office. And just like every day, my mom, who loved us so much, had made a lunch, apple juice, sandwich, Fritos, and an orange. It was always the same. And it had my name on it. And I have never felt more sick. I enrolled that bag as I was waiting for this principal to officially expel me. And there's my name, and there's a heart,
And I knew that inside it there would have been a note. But the last day of sixth grade. From a woman who just never gave up. Just never gave up on me. I'm just thankful for that. I can't look at Catholic schoolgirl handwriting without remembering feeling sick with myself. I will be on the EIB network just around the corner. This is the Todd Herman Show. We are every weekday, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. live on the Pacific Coast and on podcasts everywhere. Now go be well, be strong, and be kind.